Hey folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 302, and this is Working Man's Armory Part 2. Now, if you remember several episodes ago, I had Joel Edwards, the owner of Working Man's Armory, and Glenn Tate interviewing with me to talk about what goes on at Working Man's Armory. And I had these guys back for a part two because there was a lot of stuff that was not talked about in the last episode. So that's the interview segment of this show. We also talk about some self-defense stuff, and they gave some pretty good opinions as to what they think makes a great self-defense gun for different purposes like home defense and concealed carry. So stay tuned for that. I want to first of all set this all up by saying that, you know, there's a lot of manufacturers out there of firearms, but there are very few people who put their heart and soul into it as if it was something that means a lot to them. A lot of manufacturers are just out to make money, and they still make good products. Don't get me wrong, they make great products, and you know, there's nothing wrong with them, but there are some people who would do it even if they didn't make any money just because they love to do it. It's kind of like me with this show. I do this show because I enjoy doing it. Yeah, I make a little bit of money on the side. It's not as much as you might think. But hey, the way I started off doing this is because I started talking about a hobby of mine and a love of mine, which is shooting and concealed carry, and I wanted to share it with the world. And I still do. And I would still do this show as long as I had listeners. It wouldn't matter. Money means nothing. It's the fellowship, it's the camaraderie, it's the sharing of information back and forth. And I think Joel Edwards is one of those types of guys in the firearms manufacturing business, which is why I think you get a really good product when you get anything from Working Man's Armory. So, without spending any more time, let's get right into the interview segment of this episode. All right, joining me for the interview segment of this show, this is kind of like Working Man's Armory Part 2, since these guys were on a couple months ago. I got Joel Edwards from Working Man's Armory and Glenn Tate, who needs really no introduction. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, always glad to be here.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff happening at Working Man's Armory, but before I ask you to get into that, Joel, I want to talk a little bit about like some self-defense stuff. For some of the people who listen to this show, some of them are kind of new shooters, or some of them like to have a little bit of a review on what other people in the industry think about what they should be doing out there. And I kind of sent you a little question, a few questions there, and I know that you're into rifles quite a bit. I'm kind of a fan of using an AR-15 for home defense, just because I've run one for a while and trained with it. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, it does make a great home defense and personal defense weapon. It all really goes back to your level of training and comfort with the rifle. However, if it's something that you're not comfortable carrying and using, then it's probably not a good choice. But if it's something that you've practiced with and are very comfortable with its usage and your ability to actually make it do what it's supposed to do, then it's definitely a great weapon. Just with the variety of loads that you can have in it, the accessories that you can put on it, it makes a perfect home defense weapon.
Well, speaking of loads you can put on it, there's a lot of people in the industry, if you listen to them, a lot of people are big fans of a .223 round inside of a house. A lot of people have tested it. A lot of prominent names have tested it and talked about its lack of penetration actually through drywall in people's homes, which I think can be kind of a plus. What do you think of that?
You know, we looked at that on the law enforcement side, switching over from 9 and 40 and 45 millimeter, 45 caliber subguns and going to a 5.56 rifle. And the 5.56 with the correct loads does seem to show a less penetration through house-type materials than the ball rounds and even some of the hollow point rounds out of the pistol caliber subguns. As long as you are using, again, the correct round that's intended to fragment or intended to expand to the point that it's not going to over-penetrate. Obviously, something specifically built, such as a barrier blind round, is going to do what it's supposed to do, which is penetrate. But your standard 5.56, 55 grain ball, generally shows no more or quite often less penetration through building materials than a 9 or a 40.
Because it's going to do what it's designed to do. It's going to fragment, right?
Exactly. It's designed to break apart once it starts tearing through hard objects.
A lot of people are big fans of a 12-gauge with double-aught buck, and I used to be a proponent of that. But, you know, I've actually tested the penetration of that stuff, and it's amazing what that'll go through. It's kind of scary inside of a house.
Yeah, buckshot, especially out of a 12-gauge, tends to tear through pretty much anything that gets in front of it. And the other thing that a lot of people don't take into account is just simply the number of rounds you are shooting out every time that you press the trigger on a 12-gauge shotgun. Assuming you're using 9-ball double-aught buck, that's now you've got 9 bullets essentially going out in every which way that they're going to go based on what they hit and how far away the target is. So your accountability is much greater with a shotgun than it is with a single rifle round going out.
Yeah, I've kind of likened the 12-gauge with double-aught buck to a gun that says, get out of my yard. It's a get out of my yard gun.
Exactly. And when you start looking at shot spread with those things and how far away you can be from a human-sized target and still keep every pellet on target, you find that once you hit 15 yards on most non-specialized rounds, you start to throw pellets off target, which means who knows where that fifth, sixth, or seventh buckshot is going.
That's a big deal. If you don't know where it's going, that's a big deal. You could be responsible for that. It's more like a close range, get out of my yard gun, or get off my porch. But inside the home, I've really kind of shied away from 12-gauge with even numbered double-aught buck or 2-buck or even 4-buck.
I prefer precision over attitude in that realm, so I would agree with you.
Ooh, I like that. I like that, Joel. Precision over attitude. That's a good one. I may have to borrow that phrase from you.
It's all yours.
So, Glenn, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with everything that was said and can amplify something, and that is I am way, way, way more proficient with an AR-15 than a shotgun. I don't like shotguns. I don't train with them. I always say, oh, geez, do I have to really run some rounds through this? I have an 870 with a Knox recoil stock. It's a great shotgun, and it's perfectly fine for what it is. I just don't like it, and I would choose a pistol over a shotgun, but I would choose an AR-15 over anything. Probably wouldn't use an AK, a little big, 7.62x39, and little too penetrating, and you lose a lot of the qualities that you two were just talking about rounds fragmenting. And obviously 5.45x39 is just a nasty needle of death that's going to bounce all over the place. And another thing to consider, yes, I am a lawyer, if I've got a jury involved, I'd much rather have an AR-15 held up to them than an evil AK that, of course, only terrorists use. So that's not a huge factor in it. But, I mean, yes, I do actually think, what do my actions look like in front of a jury? But anyway, AR is, I think, been widely accepted now as a home defense weapon. And the grandpa's – I was going to say wives' tales, but I guess it's more grandpa's tales about the best thing at all would, you know, for home defense would be birdshot in a 12-gauge. I don't think it's true anymore. We can do better. We can. I mean, it would surprise me if the military would use a round for several decades that was absolutely horrible inside of residential buildings, because a fair number, I'm guessing, I'm not in the military, fair number of the missions involve urban settings and residential, you know, areas. So, AR-15, I think, is pretty much the way to go.
Well, now, it's interesting, Glenn, you bring up those evil Haji guns, those AKs, because in a few minutes I'm going to ask Joel about a couple of his current projects, which I've looked at on his website, which he's got some really cool AKs on there that I think are just fabulous. So I might take you to task a little bit on those. But you're right, it's a terrorist gun, but hey, what the heck, right?
Exactly.
Hey, Joel, let me ask you something. What do you think? This is kind of a loaded question, but it's one I get asked all the time. So if you're going to advise somebody when they're buying their first handgun, for example, and let's say they want to carry it, it's a carry gun, which most carry guns seem to sometimes double as somebody's home defense gun if they're on a limited budget. How do you tell them to go about selecting such a gun?
That's actually a question that comes up a lot, even in law enforcement, when guys are looking for what backup gun they should carry or what emergency gun. And my simple answer to that is go buy the gun that you are going to carry every day without fail. The gun that you buy that's this super fancy $2,000 one-off custom piece that's going to be your barbecue carry gun is great and everything, but if you're not willing to carry it every single day, all the time, then it's not going to do you any good. So, you know, go to a range, rent a couple different guns, see how they feel, see what the holster options are, and find the one that fits your lifestyle best. For me, it's a Glock 19. It has been for years and years, and I carry it every single day. For some, that might be too big, and for some, that might be too small. For me, it fits perfect, and I have no problem going anywhere in the world, legally anywhere in the world that I can take it with it in my holster. And so for me, that's my perfect gun. For other people, it might be something completely different.
Glock 19 is a great choice. Anybody who's been listening to me long enough knows I'm a big fan of that. I also am becoming very partial to my Glock 26. And actually, I'll tell you something that I've been carrying a lot lately, which is really growing on me, is my Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm.
Yeah, I for backup guns for cops, that's become a big thing, because a lot of them, they find out that what they originally wanted is too cumbersome, or it doesn't hold up to the dirt and sweat and everything that gets on it, and they stop carrying it eventually. I carried a Smith 642 under my arm, was my backup gun, and it was, I carried it because I could carry it every single day and it didn't bother me. So take some time and find that gun that best fits you.
Yeah. Glenn, you're a Glock guy too, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Big Glock 42 fan. I put up a picture on Facebook this week of me in my new work clothes, and it's this suit, right? And there's not a lot of real estate for hiding anything, and a Glock 42, you know, it works spectacularly well for me. As far as full-size guns, big fan of Glock 17, although 19s are great too, but I think a 42 is small enough to be in the backup gun category. And one of the cool things about a Glock 42 for a backup gun is that it's a Glock and it's very reliable. I'm not trying to, you know, cast aspersions on other guns. It's just that I think when it comes to pure reliability, Glocks are pretty well known for that. And whether or not, objectively speaking, Glocks are reliable, I think they are, and that's important, because in my mind, every time I pull out that Glock 42, I know that it's going to fire if I decide to make it fire, and only if I decide to make it fire, which is another important feature. But that's why I'm a fan of that, and I've heard nothing but good things about Shields and a variety of other guns. It's just for me, I can't stuff too much information in my head, and I need to have one thing and a Glock and the manual of arms, and I know that thing. I know my 17 and my 42 intimately. I can do with my eyes closed, and that's what I need, because if I'm ever in one of these bad situations, I'm going to be scared out of my mind. I'm going to have a tingly tongue with adrenaline, and I'm going to have gross motor skills but no fine motor skills. So I want to take away every possible way I can fail. I need to rig this like so I don't fail, and that would be one of the ways I would do it.
Well, that's a very good point. All right, thanks, guys. Let's shift gears a little bit. Joel, you're the owner of Working Man's Armory, aren't you?
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Working Man's Armory. In the last episode that we did, I gave you a chance to really present Working Man's Armory out there to the people. And I'm just going to go ahead and give out the website, workingmansarmory.com. What I like about your philosophy is you build some very nice rifles, and I think it really fits the name of your company. It's for the working man. It's for the working man that maybe doesn't have a pile of money but wants to get a good quality rifle. And I got to ask you something. I'm intrigued. I went to your current projects page, and I see some AK builds there. You know, the AK doesn't get talked a lot about these days. The AR-15 seems to get all the buzz, but I am a fan of AKs. I know Glenn likes the AKs in 5.45x39. But I got to ask you, Joel, I got to ask you about this this Working Man's Armory signature rifle based on the Sega platform. I think that's kind of cool looking. Talk about that.
It is. I mean, they're great rifles. The unfortunate thing is that the Segas are going away, so now we're looking for other means of doing it.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, and it's going to keep up. It's just a matter of sourcing more domestic parts and relying less on imported parts. The good thing is there are still plenty of brand new old stock imported AK kits out there to build off of. The big deal has been barrels lately, and I recently sourced a really good 4150 steel barrel maker who can make the blanks I need for both 5.45 and 7.62. So that's sort of been a sticking point lately, is why everything hasn't moved forward as much as I'd want it to. But now that I've got that taken care of and I've got my barrel profile designed, over the next few months here, we'll really get back into the research and get back into making custom AKs that exceed the accuracy of what the general person thinks of an AK, and are much more comfortable to use than the standard Wassers or something like that that people are used to.
Now explain to people why the Segas are going away.
The Segas are going away because there was an executive order banning weapons imports from Russia now. So that's pretty much cut the pipeline on that one.
Yeah, our president's such a nice guy, isn't he?
And he did it in a way that it is almost impossible to circumvent. I don't say impossible because somebody will eventually figure it out, but it's almost impossible to circumvent that, because anything tied to that transaction, including banks and importers and everything else like that, will also get immediately cut off.
So can you no longer, you can no longer get any of the Sega receivers, right?
Yeah, the Sega rifles, what's in country is in country, and even the ones apparently that are in country that still have money owed on them that haven't been completely paid off are not going to be released. So the prices on the Sega Sporters, which was what we were using as the basis of the gun, has shot up. But it's also made us think harder about the ways to improve the AK versus just modifying a Russian import. And I think that's sort of a good thing, in that I've now got two prototype AKs, one in each caliber, that I think the design is more in line with the American way of thinking and the American way of wanting to accessorize and make things more modular for the AK.
So if somebody orders the Working Man's Armory AK, if they order that from you today, what are they going to get?
They're going to get, you know, AK of their choice. But let's take a 7.62x39, for example. You get a full custom build. While we have a standard rifle, the way it works with us is that we talk about what you want and we build what you want rather than just a standard version of it. So the type of stock, the type of forearm, the type of rail system, the type of gas tube, all that is up to you. And basically, and we'll talk through that one. As far as the bare bones rifle, you'll get a good, high quality American-made receiver. I only build on really two types of receivers out there. I prefer Nodak Spud. I think they make a fantastic receiver. And then there's another maker out there goes by 74U LLC, who makes a fantastic receiver. Both of those are world class receivers. And then you'll get my barrel profile, which on the 7.62, for example, is thick enough that you can thread, that it is threaded in 5/8 by 24, which is your standard AR-10 thread diameter. So any AR-10 can, any AR-10 flash suppressor, any AR-10 base muzzle accessory will simply thread right onto your AK-47, which is something that hasn't been done on a large scale without multiple adapters getting in the way. And once you start adding multiple adapters on your muzzle brakes, you start getting problems with baffle strikes on suppressors and just losing accuracy in general.
Yeah. Now, you build them on 7.62 and 5.45x39, right?
Correct. Those are the two that I'm doing right now.
So, Glenn, I know you're a big 5.45x39. You think that's just an absolute destructive death ray that goes out of the end of a rifle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fast, and it's really stable, except when it hits something, and then it gets really, really unstable. I love 5.45 because it's relatively inexpensive, and even with the import ban, it's still the most expensive 5.45 non-corrosive you're going to find is roughly the same price as 5.56. And so that's a pretty good benchmark. I mean, if it, the most expensive is the same amount as most people are shooting all the time, that's okay. You can, of course, use corrosive, and that's cheaper. But it's nice and light. It's small. I love light. I love maneuverable. And one of my favorite uses for the 5.45 is I call them wives and kids guns. You can hand a 74, AK-74, just about anybody, and you can hold them up all day. You can carry them all day because they're so light. The recoil is light, and it's just a handy little caliber. I mean, when it comes to some uses, I do like 7.62x39. I mean, it's more robust and it's easier to find ammunition. So, you know, because I believe in diversity, I have plenty of 7.62 rifles and 5.45 rifles. So, you know, that's my idea of diversity.
Yeah, and Joel will build you a nice one.
Yeah, exactly.
I will. I've actually got a few builds in mind for Glenn right now.
Yeah. Hey, Joel, has the anti-gun president shut down Russian imported ammo?
Yeah. It's gone. You know, luckily a lot of that stuff was coming out of other countries to begin with. So Ukraine is they're still shipping some. It's harder now, but Romanians, Bosnians, Taiwanese, there's still plenty of ammo out there. And I think that you can look at the market and what prices are doing right now and see that nobody's really too threatened. If everybody was threatened that the lack of Russian ammo coming out was going to be a huge devastating thing, you'd see prices going up, but you're not. You're seeing prices going down every single week.
Yeah, well, that's good. I think the AK is underrated. You know, you say you build them so that you can get real good accuracy out of them. Is that because of your barrel profile?
The barrel profile and just AKs aren't inaccurate to begin with. I think that's a myth. I think there's a lot of AK ammo out there that is inaccurate. But when you put good ammo in an AK, you're probably going to see the same groupings that you're going to get out of your standard M4. With 5.56 or with a 5.45, you're going to see possibly even better stuff with the MilSERP. It's just really hot, accurate ammo. I think it's a misnomer to say that AKs are inaccurate. Where I am trying to pull more accuracy out is a better cut barrel, better rifling.
Yeah. I think it's a myth too. You know, there's a lot, you know, they got that inaccuracy tag, I think for several reasons. People didn't know how to shoot them. The sights on most cheap AKs are not all that terrific. And then people would go out and they'd buy this, you know, the cheapest ammo they could find and expect to have the same groupings out of their AR. And I think that was just unrealistic.
Right. You know, on my AKs with Tula ammo or some cheap white box 7.62, I'm lucky to hold 4 inches at 100 yards. But when you throw in some Yugoslavian M67 surplus, which is fantastic ammo, I'm beating out standard M4. I'm holding an inch or a little over an inch at 100 yards. So it's really, I think, more the ammo than it is the rifle itself.
Yeah, but I'm going to say something about that. I want both of you guys to chime in. Hey, and don't be afraid to, you know, disagree with all or a part of what I say. 4 inches at 100 yards, I think that's still good. How much more do you need? I mean, I'm going to say the same thing I say about handguns. If you're going out to the range and you're practicing shooting dime-sized groups, that's great. That means that you're a good marksman. But in the heat of the moment when you're getting attacked or shot at, I don't think you're going to shoot a dime-sized group. And the same thing when you have an AK in your hand and you're trying to defend your property. You know, do you really need more than a 4-inch group?
If you can hit an 18-inch plate at 200 yards under stress, that's as much as you'll ever need in life.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you're shooting an 18-inch group at 200 yards. I mean, that's still, you know, that's smaller than a man-sized target.
There you go. And that's the point.
What do you think, Glenn?
Yeah, absolutely. I have this thing about, I call it bench rest shooting, and nothing against bench rest shooting. That's kind of how I started, and I realized that for defensive shooting, it was actually a bad skill set. That would be bench rest shooting was a bad skill set because you focus so much on these teeny little variances. You don't react quickly. You don't act quickly or react quickly. And if what you're going to do is hit quarter and 50-cent piece targets at 100 or 200 yards or whatever, that's fantastic. I found that it slowed me down mentally, and I decided that the kind of shooting I'm going to do, and by the way, the kind of shooting I find to be a lot more fun, because fun is a huge factor in all of this, is, you know, 50 yards, 100 yards, and the accuracy you're describing is just fine for that. And also, I kind of have a luxury. I've got POW, and this weekend, he was just trying a new gun, new barrel. He was just sighting it in 400 yards. You know those inch-wide surveyor's stakes with the little surveyor's tape?
Yeah.
He was punching them down the middle with a new gun at 400 yards. And so I kind of have the luxury of not needing to hit out at 400 yards because there's POW.
POW's insane. He's a one of a kind. But, you know, that's cool. Thanks for sharing that with us, Glenn. I think the AK, like I said, it's underrated for somebody that's on a budget. Joel, can they get the AKs from you less than the ARs you build?
They run about the same.
They do? Okay.
Yeah, the AKs, you know, unfortunately, material cost for me is high, as I am a smaller company. But they are still less expensive than comparable AKs from other companies. So I can build you something that's on par with another high profile company at a discount from where they are.
And if somebody likes that 7.62 round, then I think they're in business, you know, getting a good AK.
Definitely, and it's a great round if you use it for what it's intended. If you like, Glenn said, if you want to sit there and bench rest shoot, you're probably gonna need to look for something else.
But if you want to shoot the 5.45x39, then get a good AK from you and go train with Glenn on how to use it.
Definitely, and you'll be hitting everything that you need to.
Yeah. So talk about some. Let's shift gears again. Talk about some AR-15s you got going.
What we're getting ready to put into production, the receivers actually on the CNC machines this week, is our 17th irregular rifle and rifle kit, which Glenn and the team and I spent many conversations talking about. And basically it is a ready-to-go AR-15 kit in a protective hard case, a Pelican or SKB quality case, where in one purchase you will get rifle, sling, aim point, light, magazines, cleaning kit, and a copy of Glenn's book, along with the protective case, all for one price, and it's going to be a fantastic rifle, and I hope it's a good seller.
Got a 17th Irregulars logo on it too, right?
It does, right there on the left side of the magwell, as bold as it can be.
And which book of Glenn's comes in there?
With the first book. Quite honestly, if you call me and you're like, I've got all of them but book 8, I can probably make arrangements to have book 8 put in there.
Joel, yeah. We can get you book 8. That's not a problem.
Will you sign them, Glenn, for an extra price?
There's no extra price. I love signing them. Not a problem.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. So that's kind of a cool kit. So talk about that AR-15 build that comes in that kit.
It is what we've sort of sat around and determined to be a good do-all AR-15 that will please the entry-level shooter as well as the more experienced shooter. It's built on my billet upper and lower receivers, and we're using a high-quality 4150 nitride-treated 16-inch mid-length gas system barrel. Everything that's aluminum on it is 7075T6, so we didn't cut any corners there. Furniture is all Magpul CTR stock with a Myad grip. The trigger is Geissele's ALG line of triggers. They're advanced combat trigger, which is a sweet little nickel boron coated trigger with about as crisp and clean and consistent of a 5-pound trigger pull as you can get. Also comes with a 13-inch rail key mod or M-lock, whatever design you prefer to go with, and a muzzle device from a company called Precision Delivery Systems, who makes an excellent comp. It makes it probably the most flattest shooting rifle that I've ever dealt with.
Okay. So, and that's called the 299 Days Kit, I see.
Yes, sir.
And there's a good picture on it. If you go to workingmansarmory.com and just search for the 299 Days package or kit, it's pretty cool.
And I like that. Neat little sidebar, all those pictures were taken at the cabin.
Real-life cabin, yes.
At the real-life cabin, cool.
It really exists, right?
Yeah, right down on the little beach below it.
Yep.
What kind of aim point's on there?
That is an aim point pro.
Uh-huh.
And I, from the feedback that I've gotten from everybody on Facebook and Instagram, that's the one that everybody would prefer to stay with. I had suggested maybe looking at an EOTech XPS, and then the new Mepro Lite, really, I'm taking a shine to. But for right now, we're going to stick with that Aimpoint Pro. It's a good all-around optic that you can leave on for months and months without having to worry about the battery going out. So it's one of those where if you pull it out of the case and you accidentally left it on, it's still going to be going.
And these kits are available now.
They are. They are. We hope to have the receivers back from anodizing here shortly and delivery before Christmas.
And before Christmas. Nice. You timed that nicely.
So, totally coincidentally, but it should make for some great Christmas gifts.
That's good. So, let's turn. Okay, you already answered the turnaround time. They'll have it before Christmas. Okay. Glenn, any comments you want to make about the 299 days package?
It's an amazing, amazing AR. The team worked on the design, in picking out the accessories and all the pieces, and those guys know what they're doing. And we shot it and love it. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful gun. And it's also just such an honor, this idea I had of the 17th Irregulars all of a sudden becoming a rifle. I mean, that's really cool. But the gun part is the part that matters. And it's a superb AR. The package it comes with got all the stuff you need. It's great. I mean, I had a bunch of ARs until I figured out what I wanted and needed, and that was kind of expensive.
Yeah.
And this is a nice way to go for that.
And it looks like you got a Magpul backup iron sight, right, Joel?
Yeah, there's a Magpul flip-up, they're polymer sights. I guess you don't know if you can really call them iron, but they are Magpul flip-up sights on it.
Right.
And every single piece on this rifle is domestically sourced. There's no Chinese or Taiwanese imports on this thing. That was one thing that was really important to me. And every piece that I selected to go on this rifle is something that I feel is of the highest quality, and down to the little detent pins that are all nickel boron coated. I try not to leave out any single detail on this rifle, and I think we really hit a good one with this one. This is a good all-around rifle that really anybody's going to be pleased with.
Yeah, what kind of charging handle is that? I see the picture of it.
That's Bravo Company's charging handle.
Okay, that's Bravo Company's tactical? Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people say, why don't you make your own this, why don't you make your own that? But when it comes down to it, when you want a good trigger, go to a company that makes triggers. That's what they do.
Right.
When you want a good muzzle device, go to a company that makes muzzle devices. So I really try to pick companies that I source parts from that's what they do. That is their niche. And they do it better than most.
Yeah. I had to ask you. I thought it was a Bravo Company charging handle. I got one of those on one of my ARs, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, they make that. That's just a great charging handle. You really can't beat it, especially for the money.
So even the detente pins are nickel boron coated.
Yeah, they are. I found a company here that does all their detents are coated, and it just, you know, I can't say that it makes it superior, but it can't hurt, and it's got to be a little more wear resistant than straight steel.
I like the shape of that trigger guard.
Yeah, it is very nice.
Yes, it is.
And what kind of magazine are you shipping that with?
Comes with 10 Magpul P-Mags.
10 Magpul P-Mags.
That's the minimum you should probably have for every rifle, so we just went ahead and threw them in there, pick up some ammo and head to the range, and you're good to go. It also, the sling is a Magpul unit as well. It's their MS4 with a push-button quick-detach swivels, which correspond to the mounting points on both the rail, the stock, and as well as the end plate has a quick detach slot in it.
Wow, that's cool.
I think it's a well thought out rifle. Even the flashlight, rather than trying to hang a flashlight and a mount on the side of a rifle and have it stick out, we went with Enforce's new line of weapons mounted flashlights that keeps it nice and low profile and close into the rifle, and where you can just simply hit it with your thumb to light up whatever you need to light up.
Okay, cool. Yeah, get that 299 days kit. I just love that 17th Irregulars logo on the receiver. That's cool.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the best logos I've ever seen on an AR receiver.
And it's unique. I mean, how many people are running around out there? I mean, hopefully more, but right now, how many people are running around out there with 17th Irregulars on their AR?
One.
It's called a prototype.
Yep.
So, one so far, right?
We get a lot of emails asking if we're going to do them as stripped lowers, and my answer would be not right now. Right now, everything that we've got coming off the machines is dedicated to full rifles. Maybe we'll get there at some point. That would be a talk that Glenn and I need to have.
Well, it's funny. I was about to ask you if you were going to offer the stripped lowers, but you just answered my question, so okay. I don't blame you, though. I mean, people need to get the complete rifle and just go with that. That's good.
Yeah, we really want to keep this one unique, and I think this is a good way to do it. But the value that you get in that kit, I think, is fantastic. You're getting in that entire kit essentially what you get in some companies for just the rifle. And quite honestly, I'm not making but a few pennies on the kit side of that thing. So I do it because I want to support Glenn. I think it brings more attention to his stuff, and as well as I'd like to get good products out into the hands of people who deserve it and who will be happy with it. If I can make a couple of dollars on the rifle itself and the kit is a wash, that's fine by me at this point. I'm doing this for the love of doing it, really, right now.
It shows in the way you describe it. So, Glenn, I'm sure you and the team have gone out and give this rifle, you've run it through its paces.
Sure did. It's on YouTube. If you search for Working Man's Armory and Glenn Tate or Working Man's Armory in 299 days, you'll see it. It's about a 10 or 11 minute professionally done video that shows not only the 17th Irregulars AR, but some of the AKs and some of Joel's full auto ARs and a full auto AK. And it's just a really cool video. You get to see, you know, us, minus my face, but you see us out there and you see Joel and you see that we're just using it and having a great time and how well these things work. And it's just kind of like a chance for people to see, you know, a day in the life of what we do for fun. And it was pretty neat. It was shot at a neat place. It was shot in June, and of course it was kind of rainy and misty because it's Western Washington, so you get that whole feel too. So the whole package.
I've seen that video. It's pretty good.
That was a great day. I haven't had that much fun on the range in quite a while, and he's got a fantastic group of guys out there. Every single one of them was some of the most professional non-law enforcement shooters that I've seen. They were a super, super good group of guys.
Joel, let me make a suggestion. You might want to consider a 299 days pistol, kind of customize some kind of a Glock or something.
That would be interesting. That's something that Glenn and I should probably kick around.
Well, a lot of people do that. A lot of people will do that, especially Glocks, because they're so easy to customize. A lot of people do that. They put their own logos on the slides, or they have their own slides made to fit the Glock and things, and they modify the frame a little bit. You might want to think about doing that.
That'd be another great package to do with holsters and magazines and other sort of things.
What do you think about that, Glenn?
I think it's a great idea. I'm just kicking myself for not having thought of it. That's fantastic, though. We'll call it the Bob Maine edition, and we'll put an E on the end of Maine like we should.
I thought of it first. Now I'm on record here of thinking it first. So, no, you take my idea and run with it. But, you know, there's a lot of people that do that. I mean, if you just were to Google custom Glocks, you'd be amazed how many people are customizing it. And it's such – or they'll customize a 1911, or maybe you could offer one of each, you know. But those two pistols are so easy to customize, you could make a 299 days pistol kit as well.
Yeah, that's definitely something to put more thought into.
And people could own one of each. All right, well, I've asked all the questions I want to ask. I'm going to give you guys the floor for about 5 minutes before we wrap it up. Oh, you know what? Actually, I'm not done. Let me go ahead and officially announce that on August 8th and 9th, 2015, almost 1 year to the day that we did the last class, Ben and I are going back out to Fort Discovery, and we're gonna have Glenn there for both days, right?
Yes.
And we're going to have maybe one or two members of the team, and we're going to put on Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. We're going to expand our curriculum a little bit. I'm going to kind of keep it a secret for now as to what we're going to do. We'll talk a little bit more about it later, but it is going to be a two-day class out there at Fort Discovery. We'll get to use the bunkhouse again and enjoy the beautiful weather, hopefully, of the first week in August in Western Washington out in Squim again. And even though we're a long ways away, this is November and it's not till August, I'm still pumped about it.
Yeah, we had such a great time last time, and the Fort Discovery facility is amazing. The bunkhouse is amazing. It's an experience. It's not just a gun thing. It's a whole experience, and every chance the team gets to go to Joe's facility at Fort Discovery, we do. We love it, and there's a good reason. I think, Bob, you can see why we revere that place the way we do.
Oh, let me pay some great compliments. I mean, Joe's facility is phenomenal. The bunkhouse, you know, when I heard the word bunkhouse, I thought, okay, it's probably just your average little old cabin. It's not. The thing's got Wi-Fi in it, of all things. I mean, it's really cool. And Joe stocks a ton of ammo in his store. So if you run out of ammo, you don't have to try to find the nearest Walmart or the nearest sporting goods store. You walk 75 yards over to his store and you buy ammo.
Yeah, exactly. It's got a beautiful classroom. And you saw the pictures of some of the folks who have taken classes there, some of the group pictures that we are not allowed to take pictures of and put online. Let me put it that way. There's some pretty amazing people that come out there and train and come back over and over again. And there's a reason for that, because it's a spectacular facility.
Yeah, so there's a registration link on my website. You can go ahead and get signed up for that August 8th and 9th class. And we got an early bird special running through the end of this year. And I'll just leave it at that. So, okay, you guys can have the floor now. Finish it up. Joel, what else do you want to say about Working Man's Armory?
You know, I think we've got a great relationship going on with Glenn here. And I think that's something that's going to be fruitful for us, as well as good for the general AR-15 and AK buying public in the future. I hope to see it continue that way. And like I've said in the past, I do this for the love of doing it. I spend a lot of time on the computer talking to different people about exactly what they want. Some of them buy and some of them don't. It doesn't hurt my feelings really either way. But if there's somebody who's looking for something special, feel free to email me. It's Joel at Working Man's Armory. And we'll talk about exactly what we can do to fulfill your wants in a rifle.
I like your business attitude. It'll carry you a long ways.
I hope it does. I'd like to continue to do this until the day that I can't see see far enough to work anymore.
Careful, that might come sooner than you think. Glenn, any cool stuff you want to talk about?
No, I mean, we've talked about a lot of things. One thing I'll mention about Joel and Working Man's Armory is we could have probably done an AR-15 with a lot of folks, and we really like Joel and his approach and the American-made products and keeping this small and getting it right and doing it the way that he does it, and that was a big deal. We get along supremely well, and he's just a regular guy. He's a working man. He's a blue-collar guy who happens to make really good guns, and that's a cool thing. I mean, I try to do things that are fun and cool and keep it within our community, because that's just a better way to go. So that's been a really, really positive thing.
I agree. Glenn, what comes after book 10?
Everybody's asking me that, and I have a very disappointing answer for everybody, and that is I don't know if anything does. I need to be inspired. I need to have a message to get out. I need to be fully fired up and getting up at 3-4 in the morning and not being able to stop writing until someone basically tears me away from the computer and makes me go to work and that sort of thing. And I don't have a message in me right now that, you know, that is doing that. I think I got 3,800 pages of message, 90 hours of audiobook message out, and I don't know that there's one left. Now, if that changes, and that can change, I can be walking down the street one day, and all of a sudden, and this has happened before, all these things line up, and I figure out all this stuff, and then I basically run home and start writing. That could happen, but I don't know that it will. So the coy business thing to do would be to say something vague like stay tuned and then never really do anything, and I'm not going to do that. The other thing I could do is have somebody else write first drafts of books, and then I basically edit them, and I think that's really a bad thing to do, and I have no interest in doing it, and so that's not going to be happening. So maybe nothing is the answer to the question, what's next?
Well, I'm going to say I'm not too disappointed if it's nothing, because, and here's why I'm going to say that, you know, there's millions of people who have still not even read one, and they, you know, the message has to get out there. 10 books, I mean, my goodness, that's amazing. That's an amazing message. And they're worth a reread. Just because you read them once doesn't mean you shouldn't read them a second or a third or a fourth time, because we lose so much. And I have to be honest, I haven't read all 10 books. As a matter of fact, I know that there are people who have read all 10, but I bet a lot of people listening to this show have not read all 10. So take a break, take a breather, do a lot of promotion, get those books and the audiobooks in the hands and the ears of as many people as you can.
Yeah, and the other thing is that now I have time to do things like, you know, go out with the team and Joel and go shoot machine guns. I mean, why the heck wouldn't you do that if you could? So there's that part of it too, yeah.
It's got to be just as much fun as writing a book.
It's way more fun. I know you're kidding me, Bob, but yeah, that's true. I'm not a nerd. I mean, I just happen to write books. But I also shoot guns, so it's weird. I can't explain it.
Well, and if you go out there and shoot some of Joel's machine guns, it's probably pretty fun.
Yeah, spectacular. Yeah, we were doing testing and evaluation of them. There were some things, little suggestions that we had for some of his things, and he is licensed to work on those and manufacture them. So, you know, it was constructive too.
You know, I love it when gun writers and owners and builders and people say testing and evaluation. Because you know what that is? That's a professional way of saying we're going to the range and having a blast.
There is that aspect of it.
Right? Am I wrong about that?
That's absolutely right. While the manufacturer sits back and cringes that something's going to go wrong.
And that's you. You're sitting back there biting your nails going, yeah. Uh-oh, what's going to happen to my rifle?
Just waiting for Murphy to pop up.
It's more fun to break stuff than it is to have to fix it. So we get to break stuff and Joel gets to fix it.
Yeah. And overall, it went really well. I think there was only one firing pin broken and one rifle tossed down range. So it went well.
That's pretty good. Well, all right, guys, thanks for generously donating your time. And, you know, make sure you check out Joel's website, workingmansarmory.com. Glenn's site is 299days.com. You can get his books in a lot of places. You can get them off of Amazon, off of my Amazon account. and you can get his audiobooks there too. So, guys, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me anytime that you need.
Well, shoot straight and shoot safe. Let's do this again soon.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls May 16th and 17th, 2015 from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
Okay, many thanks to these guys again for donating their time. I really appreciate that. I learned a lot just from listening to those two guys, and I hope you did on that segment of the show. You know, I want to say something. They sort of reminded me of something that takes me back to some of my more earlier days of shooting and concealed carry and doing this podcast. I'm starting to drift back towards that one gun, one man philosophy. In other words, one guy gets used to one gun, one handgun, one rifle, one shotgun if you use one, and just get real good at it. You know, I collected a lot of guns. I decided to shoot a lot of guns. I'm still doing my one-year experiment with a 1911 versus a striker-fired pistol, which, by the way, I'm going to quit doing that in January or February, and I will do a podcast on that as to my findings over 1 year. But I tell you what, it's making more sense to me again, and a lot of people seem to be collecting a lot of firearms, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with it. I would just say one type of gun, not just necessarily one gun in terms of quantity of one, but one type. You know, you heard Glenn say he likes to shoot Glocks. You heard Joel say he likes to shoot Glocks. Not everybody should shoot a Glock. If you like to shoot M&Ps or XDs, or if you like a Ruger better, you know, or if you like a Taurus better, or if you like a Sig better, or if you like an H&K better, but stick to that one type, that one platform. If you like a 1911 better, nothing wrong with a 1911. You know, but stick to that one platform. One gun, one man, one gun, one woman, and train with it and learn it. Because Glenn brought up a really good point. And I want to emphasize two points in that interview segment. Glenn brought up one good point about, you know, when the stink hits the fan, something really bad happens, you want to have something that's really, really familiar to you, that you've trained with hours and hours and hours and hours and thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds. And I also like what Joel said, that he favors precision over attitude. I'm going to borrow that phrase from him. Precision over attitude. That was when we were discussing the AR-15 versus a shotgun. I know a shotgun has a lot of attitude, and you hear a lot of people talk about that if you read a lot of internet forums or you go on, you know, go on YouTube and listen to a lot of people talk about the shotgun. They talk about the attitude of a 12 gauge with double aught buck. And I used to be one of those kind of guys. But the precision of using an AR-15, especially if you're well trained with it and you really know what you're doing with it, I think precision over attitude probably wins out the day. I mean, let's face it, we mainly use firearms for self-defense, don't we? Even if you're a competitive shooter. Think about it. Think about this now. How many of you listening to this are competitive shooters? You probably favor precision over attitude, don't you? That's why you see a lot of people shooting a 9mm.
because they can be more precise with it. They can have higher scores with a 9mm. They can practice more because the ammo is cheaper and things like that, rather than the attitude of a bigger caliber that might be harder to control, more expensive to shoot. So think about that. All right, many thanks to these guys. I appreciate that. That's pretty much it. That's all I wanted to share with you on this 302nd episode of the Handgun World Podcast. There's many ways to support this show if you like what I do. I'm not going to rehash them. I pretty much talk about them on every single show. But consider supporting my show, taking one of the classes that we offer, and things like that. With that, folks, with all that said, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. This is Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.